The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. This is Andrew Loker subbing in for your regular host, Stephen Fleury, who's presently in Jerusalem. We are coming to you live today from Edstone. It's a special treat for me to be here in the studios, looking out the window at the beautiful English landscape. It's exciting to be a part of this very dynamic work. It just was a few days ago that we were in Edmond, flew over here with Mr. Fleury and a team, and we had the online appearance campaign, which I'll mention in just a moment. And as I said, Stephen Fleury's down in Jerusalem with his father. I'm spending some time here with the students, enjoying their company, the staff. We had a wonderful Sabbath day and trying to get some work done here in the studio. Well, as I said, Mr. Gerald Fleury is leading a team, including his son and Mr. McDonald, down in Jerusalem, pursuing different options for reaching the people there. I'm sure they'll have a lot more to report over the coming days and weeks, and hopefully we'll get a program or two from Jerusalem. Well, we had the online appearance campaign yesterday, and it was hugely successful. We had more than 1,000 live streams, and that means several more than 1,000 were listening, as there were multiple people in certain locations. And I don't really want to get into the details of that. I want to leave that for Mr. Stephen Fleury. He can really paint the picture for us of just how successful that was. But we're really pleased with the number of visitors that we had. It was just a fantastic day. And as he said, we hope this is the first of many of these type of events for the future. We're doing all that we can to utilize technology and a variety of media sources to reach this, the whole world, really, with God's message. I'd like to really call a lot of praise to the marketing team and the technical team here that worked so hard to make that happen. Of course, the most difficult job, the most challenging, is preparing that message, and that was phenomenal. I was able to be a part of the behind-the-scenes crew, and we did have a few glitches, as you might have noticed, with the video streaming in the middle, and we were happy that we got that worked out by the end. They have been testing from Edstone for weeks in preparation for this, and it's been a busy time for them with a lot of moves of offices and technology here up into the new studio, getting everything set up and then taking on new projects. Like I said, this is a very dynamic work. It's very exciting to be a part of it. I do have to say, though, honestly, I just marvel at the team that God has assembled. They fight very hard. They think through some of the difficult problems that present themselves. Mr. Trables was, I think, just really effective in his planning. So it is quite a crew that really backs and supports these messages on both sides of the ocean. That's true, obviously, with all of our regional offices, but with some of the media projects, whether it be websites or radio production or television production, there are a lot of people that give of their time and their efforts, and some really talented young people that do understand the technology quite well. So we're just excited that it went well. I'm anxious to hear how Stephen Fleury thinks it went and to just tell us more details on that. So as I said, I'll leave that for him. The campaigns in general have been wonderfully successful for the past few years. They always have been, but it seems the last few over the year, or the last 2 years, I should say, just have really brought a lot of excitement to the local areas. We've invited quite a few people to the church from different areas. We've talked about this before. It doesn't happen the very next weekend in most cases. Mr. John McDonald, the regional director for Canada, just sent a message through a few days ago about inviting some new individuals that attended the campaign in Toronto. We have more campaigns coming up. The next one is scheduled in Glasgow. That will be hosted by Stephen Fleury. That will take place on the weekend of March 23rd and 24th. And I believe we had the same situation with the last campaign. His father, Gerald Fleury, will also be hosting a campaign in Portland, Oregon on that same weekend. And so God is really getting this message out there. The online appearance campaign gives all of us a taste of the kind of message that is given at those different sites around the world. And you can understand why people are so excited about them. So as I said, we have Glasgow coming up for Mr. Stephen Fleury, and then Mr. Gerald Fleury will be in Portland, Oregon. The Oregon campaign, we're expecting about the same size of attendance that we had down in Tampa, Florida, so we're anxious to do that. We've had campaigns in Portland years ago, and so it's time to revisit that city. That will likely, Oregon campaign will likely be the final trip for our Gulfstream G450 before it goes into a significant maintenance event. It was planned to have that maintenance. It's a big inspection just to make sure the aircraft is still airworthy and sound, and we anticipate a good report on that. We did have a few issues with the aircraft coming over here. Actually, once we got here, the issues presented themselves, but they've been worked out. If you just keep praying about the details, it is a complicated piece of machinery, and Satan, of course, would love to attack that and slow us down, but God does prevail, and we have miracles along the way. I'm sure we'll hear more about that in the future. Getting back to this maintenance event, though, it is something that all of us can be praying about. The repair cost for it will basically come in line with the maintenance or the issues that they find or lack thereof. So we're hoping for a much less than expected cost for this service, and time will tell. Again, that aircraft goes into service about April 1st, if I recall right, and it should be a several-week process. We have been saving for that repair. We have the cash on hand, so that's always helpful as well. And what's not used for it, we will continue to use to pay down the balance on the loan. And speaking of finances, I just like to give you a few updates on what's going on in the work. This is a very inspiring report for us. The church, as we enter 2019 now, we've wrapped up most of our financials for 2018, and the global combined income is up everywhere around the world. Now, we do have some countries that are perhaps down a little bit, other countries that are up a little bit more, but all of them pretty much within 5% of the previous year. In the United States, where we received the largest portion of our global donations, we ended the year in a hugely positive way. I'd like to give you some highlights from the financial year. And again, this is for the church in the United States. We had the highest ever amount of bequest income in 2018. That was really helpful to go toward paying down the purchase price of the aircraft, as well as funding digs in Israel. So that was hugely helpful to us. The aircraft fund ended down 25% compared to 2017, but that was expected. If you remember, in 2017, that was the year that we purchased the plane. We had several people that decided to committed to making a one-time-only donation, and some of those were just extremely generous. And so we knew that that wouldn't be coming year after year. And actually, even though the amount was down, we still ended up with a higher donation total there than what we had projected. We had the highest amount of donated income for the Jerusalem Fund, as well as for the Armstrong International Cultural Foundation. We had our third highest ever total for first tithe and general offerings in the United States. And we had our highest total ever for the Holy Day offerings. The Holy Day offerings, if you've been a part of God's church, we give those seven times a year. And they typically account for anywhere from 10 to 20% of the total donation income. This last year, it was 15%, right in the middle. And as I said, it was the highest total ever, and it was really welcome. We're nearing the end of what I consider like a dry period where we've gone several months without Holy Day offerings. Those obviously help us build up our balance that we use throughout the year. And December is typically a very strong month for us, and it was this year again, which was welcome news. We weren't exactly sure how the income tax changes would affect our income, and it seemed to have just really a minor impact, if any at all. So we have some very devoted coworkers and, of course, members and the prospective members that contribute regularly. We come into January and February, and there's not a lot of special donations received. And so it's going to be nice to get through this time and get into the Holy Day offerings once again. I just really wanted to say thank you to everybody that does support this work. As I said, 2018 was, if you combine all of our accounts around the world, it was the largest year of donation income ever. Co-workers accounted for 28% of that income that was donated to the church. That was down slightly from the previous year. And the more I thought about that, I was kind of encouraged because I think more of our co-workers are actually starting to attend with us, becoming prospective members and members. So we hope to see that trend increase. So I'm going to run out of time if I stick on these subjects. I do have some other material to get into. So we'll take a short break here, and then we'll come back and talk about the Green New Deal.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If the church came into existence as an instrumentality for getting people saved, then by what means did God try to save people prior to Christ's founding of the church? Jesus did not appear until 4,000 years after Adam and the original sin. If God is and has been trying to convert the world, what means did he use during that 4,000 years between Adam and Christ? Few people in the traditional Christian world have ever stopped to even consider these questions. To nearly everyone on earth, the very existence of the church is a great mystery. The biblical facts of the church's origin and its purpose for being are clearly revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's book, Mystery of the Ages. Request your complimentary copy today. It's offered free of charge at no cost or obligation to you. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back, everyone. We've been hearing a lot about the Green New Deal that was presented by liberal Democrats, or socialists, you might even call them. A lot of revealing facts have been discussed on this show and other shows from the church, as well as just really in conservative media. And I read a couple of stories that impacted me, I don't know, it was about a week ago, and have been thinking about this topic for a while. Obviously, it's something that's still in the news, and I was happy to hear that. Because I was afraid as quickly as the news cycle turns over that I'd prepare this program and I'd be covering a subject that's not really a focus. But that's not the case at all. There are new news stories just about every day that are, in a way, I think it's very enriching to me that they're going on record having to take a position with this proposed legislation. And I wanted to get back into this subject because it is hotly debated. It's been analyzed up and down, and it's even being mocked. The first article that I have to quote here, and this is a little bit more longer of a quote, is from Politico, and it was from February 12th, 2019. The title of the article is "McConnell: Senate Will Vote on the Green New Deal." And this was the article that kind of got me excited, forcing everybody to go on record about how they support or fight against this proposed legislation. Politico says Republican lawmakers challenged Democrats to back up their support for the Green New Deal on Tuesday. And again, this is about 2 weeks old now. They were asking for a vote in the chamber. It says the move by McConnell is an attempt to use the plan spearheaded by freshman representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to paint Democrats, including about a half dozen presidential candidates, as far left of the American public in their support for a measure Republicans have derided as socialist fantasy. So again, it's a political maneuver trying to expose, I think, some of the lunacy, if you'll allow me to use that term, that surrounds this deal. McConnell said, we'll give everybody a chance to go on record and see how they feel about the Green New Deal. The sponsors came out, and a lot of the Democrats came out and were frustrated by this. They are arguing it's a political trick or gimmick, and to a certain extent it is. But let's think about what they're calling for in this Green New Deal. They're asking for a 10-year, quote, national mobilization, end quote, to move the United States economy off fossil fuels, That's their effort to combat climate change. They also want to provide health care for all, increase wages, and expand union rights. This legislation or proposed legislation is supported, as I read earlier, by several Democratic presidential candidates for the 2020 elections. Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Kirsten Gillibrand, Cory Booker, they're just some of the names that have expressed support for this Green New Deal. As I said, the Democrats were a little bit upset with Mr. McConnell for bringing this to a vote. And I think it's a really smart move by McConnell. And the reason why I say that is because God has a lot to say about this issue as well. We'll be playing a clip here in just a second from a Key of David program that Gerald Flurry taped in December 2017. The title of his program was The Most Deadly Climate Change Deception. And we'll go ahead and play clip one now.
I don't want to talk to you about political views today, except one, and it is a deadly, deceptive view that is going to affect every single one of us if we believe it. There was an ex-U.S. Secretary of State that recently talked about this subject on television. And he said that all of these violent storms that you see around America and the world are caused by climate change. Now, that is just about the most deadliest deception you could possibly hear, and I want to show you why. There are many others that have that view. They have it, they believe it, but today I want to bring God's view into this climate change controversy.
That's what makes our programming so special, is we present you God's perspective. If you listen to men, it's often a two-sided argument. Some of it's very heatly or hotly contested between politicians. It depends on the issue. And as we'll hear from Mr. Flurry, the biggest problem is nobody wants to take God's view. Nobody wants to hear that. Mitch McConnell in the Senate is trying to embarrass the Democrats for supporting this legislation. In the House of Representatives, Republicans are calling on Nancy Pelosi to bring a vote on this resolution. And again, she's fighting against that. I think just over the weekend, Dianne Feinstein was confronted with a group of young school children, and she was in an argument with them, or certainly a hot discussion, trying to defend her position. It is a firebrand. It is something that does get a lot of attention in this world. President Donald Trump and a lot of the Republicans, according to Politico here, says they've latched on to the plan in an effort to paint Democrats as radicals who are intent on damaging the U.S. economy. So we'll discuss that with today's program. What is the impact on the economy? Is that just a smokescreen, or is there something to their opposition to the Green New Deal? Mr. Trump said this: they want to take away your car, reduce the value of your home, and put millions of Americans out of work and spend $100 trillion in the process. Now, that was a political rally. And again, it begs the question, well, how much truth is there? We like to examine all of these statements by politicians and measure the factual structure behind what they're saying. What's interesting, when you look at both sides of this discussion or this issue, it's all politics, and there's no solutions. Now, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, the critics of the Green New Deal really seized on what were called talking points. It was a memo from Ocasio-Cortez's office that was released, they said, accidentally. They said it was just a working copy. They quickly deleted that. They tried to take it out of the public. And again, because I think it expresses some of the really outlandish ideas. They talk about offering economic security to everyone, those that are willing to work and those that aren't willing to work. Just meditate on that for a while. They talk about replacing air travel with high-speed rail, even though it's just not practical in the time frame that they're talking about, and with the budget or the lack of money that would have to bring about this concept. I want to strip away the politics again and have you just consider climate change from a biblical point of view. And again, we'll listen to a clip from Mr. Fleury as he introduces that thought. Clip number two.
Now, this may seem a little strange to some people, but the greatest storm ever on this earth was Noah's flood. And it wasn't caused by climate change. It was caused because of man's sins on this earth. And no, that flood covered up the peak of all the highest mountains. You talk about a violent storm. That really was one. And there was no physical evidence at all that it was coming upon the world.
So I do encourage you to go back and listen to the whole program to get all of those quotes in context. But think about what he's saying, that flood that came was a surprise to man. It didn't have to be. There was ample warning that it was coming. And the warning wasn't about fossil fuel consumption. Obviously, in Noah's day, maybe they weren't burning fossil fuels like we do today. They probably weren't. I understand that. But what was the cause of that global flood? It was sin. It was correction from God. And to blame that flood on anything else just essentially is an attempt to take God out of the picture. And really, when you get into the Green New Deal, that's a big part of their argument. Though, as he said, they're not going to say that directly. They probably don't even think that. And yet, that's the truth of what's really happening. I have just one more quote here from this Key of David program. Clip number three, please.
But look, if you just make that blanket statement about climate change, about it just causing all of these violent storms, you're rejecting everything God says about that subject. You're just rejecting it. I don't think those people that say that would normally always say that they're anti-God or not religious or whatever. But what they're saying is in direct conflict with what God says. And who do you think is going to prevail in that issue?
That's the question we have to ask. Who's going to prevail in this issue? Will the socialists? Will the moderate Democrats? The Republicans? Mankind in general? What is the outcome? There's no denying that there are some catastrophic, quote-unquote, natural events taking place. We need to understand why. We need to do what we can to prevent those. Going back to this Politico article, it says, supporters of the Green New Deal have said the resolution was designed to lay out our goals to fight climate change and to address economic inequality rather than any specific policy proposal. So we're getting kind of murky here, and we'll see that that's historically the approach to these New Deal policies. There's really no call to address sin. Of course, that's not going to be put forward by the governments of man. And still, just on a physical level, what about this Green New Deal? Politico says the Republicans say the Green New Deal hides its real costs. We'll check into that. We'll check their facts. And I think I have some very thought-provoking articles from some very reputable sources for all of us to consider. There is a way we can measure the real cost, and it's based on history. This was a quote from the Senate Majority Whip, John Thune. He said, it's possible the Democrats didn't provide any details for their plan because they knew outlining the actual costs would sink their plan from the very beginning. They can't provide the details because it's a fairy tale. It's a socialist dream, as they said. It's ridiculous to think that this is even possible now, and that's what makes it so hotly contested. This senator said, like other socialist fantasies, this is not a plan that can be paid for by merely taking money from the rich. And that's what we're seeing addressed probably most vociferously from some of the rich. Now, I believe we can go back and get a little historical context for our discussion here. I'm sure you recall the New Deal, That was used by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt back in the 1930s, excuse me. And I wanted to give you a few historical highlights to refresh your memory. I got this from a textbook that I think we're hoping to use at Imperial Academy. It's called A Patriot's History of the United States. It's really a great book on history, and I just find it really fantastic at summarizing some of these major historical events of the past. They're talking about the early presidency of Mr. Roosevelt, and they talked about the luck that he had coming into office. He had an assassination attempt against him that failed. When he came into power, they had just repealed Prohibition. And the slogan, the popular slogan at the time, was beer by Easter. And as the historian says, if nothing else, the flow of alcohol seemed to liven the spirits of the nation. But more importantly, again, quoting this source, it says it provided new sources of revenue that the Roosevelt administration desperately needed. Skipping down a little further in this history, it says, in fact, Roosevelt hoped to capitalize on the terrifying collapse of the economy, his own absence of pre-election promises, and a timid Congress to bulldoze through a set of policies that fundamentally rearranged the business and welfare foundations of American life. Now, hopefully this all sounds kind of familiar. We are looking at a terrifying potential collapse of the economy, and really it's taking place around us. And we're looking at legislation that's being put forward without any consequence, really, for re-election. It's early in their terms. And they're dealing with a divided, timid Congress. For President Roosevelt, he used that as an opportunity to bulldoze through a set of policies that was going to really change business and welfare in America. It says many of FDR's programs undertaken under the rubric of the New Deal for Americans came as a spur-of-the-moment reaction to the latest crisis. It is amazing what we can learn from history. It is fantastic for us to go back and study and just look at how this legislation, how this came through, and the consequence. Look at the environment in which it was pushed through. It was just a knee-jerk reaction to a late crisis. I want to give you a timeline of events that I think is pretty informative as well. In 1932, Roosevelt was elected for his first term. By 1933, 100 days into his presidency, the New Deal legislation was passed. And it really focused on reorganizing the economic structure of the United States. Prohibition was repealed, as I said, and in 1933, the FDR took the nation off the gold standard. So now we were capable of spending without really having to back that. What else was going on in 1933 when we decided to start to spend money we didn't have? Well, Adolf Hitler was named chancellor in Germany. In 1934, the minimum wage law was passed. And as I'll cover here in just a few moments, that is still affecting the economy today. A year later, 1935, Social Security program created. 1936, President Roosevelt was reelected. 1938, Germany expands into Czechoslovakia, and the United States unemployment soars once again. We'll talk about that. 1939 was the golden year for American cinema. You even heard on the news this morning, the leading story, if I recall correctly, was all about movies and awards. 1939, a golden year for cinema in the United States. Adolf Hitler invaded Poland. The world was at war. 1940, President Roosevelt is reelected again. Ultimately, he served four terms. He died during his fourth term, but he's the only president in the United States to serve more than two terms. So that gives us a little background to what was going on in the nation at the time when he put forward the New Deal. And you could get into the details. There were several phases of what he put forward. Remember the crisis. Remember the rush legislation without counting the costs. Remember the fact that the world was going to war and America was going to the movies. Investopedia is an online investing source, and they also carry some news. And they had this article that was written in July 2018. Just to paraphrase the lead into this article, it was entitled "The Economic Effects of the New Deal." It says, on October 29th, 1929, or Black Tuesday, the United States stock market came crashing down. And that began what was the most severe economic crisis in U.S. history. It was called the Great Depression, as we know. By 1933, so 4 years later, gross domestic product per capita in the United States had fallen nearly 30%. The average unemployment rate had risen from 3.2% to 25.2%. This is the environment in which Mr. Roosevelt campaigned. And he came out and offered this new deal, this solution, something that would turn around the economy, something that would rescue the United States. It was a very popular campaign slogan, just as we see the Green New Deal today does have a lot of support. President Roosevelt won by a landslide. And so he began to reform the U.S. economy. He was successful in reducing the income inequality. Have you heard that talked about recently? Right? He wanted to take from the rich and give to the poor, bring a more equal footing to all Americans. But as this article says, that plan failed to pull the economy out of its depressed state. Skipping down a little bit further here, I won't take all the time to quote all of this. It does say Roosevelt believed economic recovery depended on cooperation at the expense of competition. So he was changing a political ideal, an economic framework for the nation. It doesn't sound that significant. It sounded like, you know, hey, we can all benefit here. We can make the world better for everybody. It was called the National Industrial Recovery Act, part of that plan. It says the NIRA, the acronym for that, the NIRA stayed in effect until 1935 when it was ruled by the Supreme Court to be unconstitutional. So this socialist program that was introduced that did level out the economic inequality, and it failed in every other way with the economy, well, the Supreme Court came back and said it's not even constitutional. And so President Roosevelt came out with the second New Deal, gave it a slightly different name. And in this deal, workers were given even greater power to engage in collective bargaining, as this article says, and they demanded higher wages than under the previous agreement. And what this legislation did, what this program did, was really strengthen the unions. And the workers' rights had to be recognized. Now, again, there's good and bad. There was, mismanagement. There was abuse taking place. But mankind doesn't have solutions. So this new deal, or the second new deal, how did it do? As I said, wages increased. The rights of the workers increased. They raised taxes on the rich. And this article says, while doing much to improve the bargaining power of the average worker, which in conjunction with a number of tax rate increases on top incomes helped reduce income inequality, this program failed to pull the U.S. economy out of its depressed state. So they put forward a plan. It didn't work. It was unconstitutional, and it created more damage. They renamed it, went after the same ideals, and again, it failed to pull the economy out. It did not work. Unemployment in 1939, this is 7 years after the policies were engaged, was still at 19%. And so it didn't have immediate impact. This article says, it is a misconception to think the New Deal was a time of great expansionary fiscal policy. Many of the New Dealers were quite fiscally conservative, which is why the social programs they instituted were coupled with significant tax increases. The bottom line, according to this article, the New Deal policies implemented by Roosevelt went a long way in helping to reduce income inequality in America, but in regards to the task of reviving an economy in crisis, the New Deal was a failure. They did take from the rich and gave to the poor, and it failed. Their concluding statement is the legacy of the New Deal is that it has helped to create greater equality and it created welfare in America. Now, let me give you, a horrifying follow-up to that article. The historical record proves this line of economic reasoning doesn't work. You could just look at history. Yes, we do look at Venezuela, and we should. They're rioting. They have a dictator. They have an uncertain military future. There's human suffering. It's just getting worse and worse there. And yes, socialism did have a significant impact on bringing that to pass. But again, let me remind you, we can go back and look at U.S. history. This article from Forbes, February 2009, is entitled, "The Old New Deal is Not Paid For." The Old New Deal is Still Not Paid For. I'm going to just grab a couple highlights. I'm running way behind here. During the 1930s, the Old New Deal was projected to cost $50 billion in federal expenditures from 1933 to 1940. So $50 billion over a seven-year period of time. It included creating the Medicare program, Social Security. It created Fannie Mae. It was government subsidies to farmers. This article says, we aren't paying down these obligations inherited from the Old New Deal. On the contrary, the total tab keeps getting bigger every year. While the Old New Deal involved unprecedented peacetime spending in the 30s, its current escalating obligations dwarf that spending. You see, they had a crisis. They came up with a plan, a solution. They spent $50 billion to enact this plan. We're still paying for it today, except it's much, much more crippling to our economy because it's not just paying that $50 billion, as we know. I'll give you some stats here in just a minute. This article says none of Mr. Roosevelt's experts who promoted the Old New Deal anticipated how costly these programs would become. See, that's the problem. It was a knee-jerk reaction. It was an economic crisis. It was a political crisis. And so they thought, well, let's just even out everybody's income. Let's give workers more rights. Let's do away with aircraft. Let's, you know, introduce all of these thoughts. We've got to do something to change. Nobody counts the cost. And that's the price that we pay when we don't study and know our history. We're just repeating it. Let me give you a few more updates here with just time passing that relate back to the creation of these programs from the New Deal. In 1965, there was debate about Medicare being increased or making more people eligible for Medicare. Forbes says opponents warned that Medicare could become a huge burden on taxpayers, but the Johnson administration, Lyndon Johnson, persuaded most members of Congress that financing Medicare would be easy because all the baby boomers were entering the workforce. They quote this expert here who says that they estimated the annual cost of Medicare at $500 million. Forbes says today Medicare's annual outlays exceed $330 billion. They thought it would cost $500 million. Well, it turns out it costs $330 billion. Right? The Green New Deal, if you remember, it calls for Medicare for all. Medicare for everybody. Well, we have to provide this health insurance. It sounds great. Let me quote to you. This is a study done by the Mercatus Center. This is July 30th, 2018. They said Medicare for all total costs over its 10-year period will amount to $32.6 trillion. If these senators and House Congress people get their way and they have Medicare for everybody over the next 10 years, it's projected to cost $32.6 trillion. And yet, if you go back and look at the history of these projections, they're woefully inadequate. They're so low. They say that if this passes, if they did Medicare for all, nearly 13% of all activity, economic activity in the United States would go toward funding this program. Again, moving forward in time, going back to this Forbes article, December 2003, President George W. Bush signed a bill to provide prescription drug benefits under Medicare. Again, it was projected to cost $534 billion over the next 10 years. However, just 14 months later, the projection changed now. The 10-year cost for prescription drug benefits would soar to $1.2 trillion. They're not even a year and a half into their 10-year cycle, and already the projection for the cost has tripled. That's a Republican presidency. They keep tinkering, they keep failing, and yet these ideas keep coming back and back. This article concludes by saying old New Deal obligations are a major factor pushing the current federal budget deficit toward $1 trillion. And then, the last sentence is, it would be highly irresponsible to launch a costly New Deal when we haven't yet paid for the bills from the old New Deal. Why don't we hear talk about that? Why don't we consider the economic costs? Why don't we think about what is causing climate change or so-called climate change? We need to learn from history. We can't abandon history. If we do, we're going to make catastrophic mistakes. Young freshman congresswomen or congressmen are potentially jeopardizing the financial health of this nation, and it's going to have global impact. It's not as though we're secure now. But if this was to pass, you can expect that we would accelerate as we drive right over the cliff. Now, before we explore another aspect of this proposed new legislation, I just want to get briefly into some of Herbert W. Armstrong's thinking. He was God's apostle. He was leading God's church throughout the presidencies or the presidential reign. Franklin Roosevelt. He had a lot to say about the New Deal. We're going to take a short break and then come back and get God's view of the New Deal and its impact on human nature.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Throughout the Bible, God uses his material creation as a vital instrument through which he communicates with mankind.
The scene is nothing short of apocalyptic.
We have nothing left.
The so-called natural disasters we see increasing are, in fact, a tool that the creator of the natural world has reserved for himself to use in order to speak with us.
We have been praying for quite a while now for the eye to pass over so we can get some kind of a break.
Severe natural phenomena are impossible to ignore. Yet for most people, even as our planet is coming apart, the message is still not resonating.
Tonight, along the Texas Gulf Coast, utter devastation. In the town of Rockport, entire blocks are decimated.
The question is, are you prepared to listen?
You know, this is of biblical proportions. Fred, take a look around me.
Our town is destroyed. And it hurts.
Jesus Christ listed nature-related disasters as being a sign of his imminent return. Request the free booklet, Why Natural Disasters, so that you can discern the signs of the times. To order our free booklet, email your request to td@kpcg.fm. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Well, as usual, I prepared too much information, and the schedule for this coming week might allow for me to come back and to wrap some of this up. I do encourage you to visit thetrumpet.com. We have all kinds of articles that address these subjects, whether it be the economic impact of this Green New Deal, or if you just look at climate change and all of the falsehoods that are associated with that, all of that's exposed through our materials. They're on our television programs, our radio programs. We're trying to give you God's perspective. And the only way you can really stay on top of that is to be a familiar visitor to thetrumpet.com and to stay tuned to the programming on KPCG. Send in your comments to Stephen Fleury. Send him in to td@kpcg.com. Rockport.fm. We'd love to hear from you. We had a lot of great comments from the online campaign, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more of those as we progress forward. Well, like I said, I've got so much material here. I did want to give you some of the comments Herbert Armstrong made related to FDR's New Deal. And I wasn't surprised to find that he had made a number of comments throughout his ministry to expose the weaknesses of this economic plan and of really a governance plan as it applied to the United States and really to any nation. I wasn't really surprised to find that he addressed this because this is really a common concept of man ruling over man that's been tried in different flavors over different times, but it's failed every single time. Just has all the other governments of men and economic plans of men. I want to first read a quote to you. This is from a March 16th, 1981, Worldwide News. Mr. Armstrong was talking. This is referring back, you'll see here, to the New Deal. And let me just read the quote here. It says, U.S. workers were working for self. More pay, shorter hours, more benefits. And think of this in light of the Green New Deal. He said, meanwhile, U.S. industrial machinery was not being replaced with more modern models. Neither capital management nor workers were willing to sacrifice for country. Meanwhile, following FDR's New Deal, the United States government went on a lavish public welfare program. American politicians wanted to get votes. Government was spending much more than it took in. How? By printing more and more money. This escalated inflation. The U.S. dollar was taking a beating in foreign countries. Foreign trade deficits rose sharply. So again, you could just look at history and you can see that the politicians were willing to compromise on sound governance and compromise on economic principles just to be reelected. And Mr. Roosevelt got reelected, and the senators and congresspeople and those that are running for higher office, those seeking the office of presidency, well, they want to get the votes. And so they will sign on to things that are popular today, pop culture and social media, just really exploiting some of the young people and their lack of historical understanding. And it looks like there's a lot of votes there. So you have some seasoned politicians and people that should know better, that should know their history. Well, they're willing to forsake all the good of the country to get into office. Herbert Armstrong continues, today this country is in dire trouble, far more serious than we realize. What was the problem? Global change? A weak economy? High energy prices? He said, marriage and family life, the foundation of a stable and enduring society, is breaking down. Morals in the cesspool. Crime escalating. We are in a world of troubles its governments can't solve. Recurring wars, governments overthrown, almost one a month, weapons of mass destruction that can erase all human life from the earth. Why? You see, Herbert Armstrong always asks why. This church asks why, and God tells us. Mr. Armstrong said, our troubles are spiritual in nature, governed by basic spiritual law. It's the way of life I simplify by using the word give, outflowing love, the way of life and cooperation, of helping, serving, sharing. It's like the comments made by Gerald Fleury at the beginning segment when we played those Key of David comments back. It's a mistake to look at this world today and try to find physical causes for these physical problems. It's a spiritual problem that is destroying. God is cursing because of our spiritual problems. Getting back to Mr. Armstrong, he's talking about this way of life. He says, if you break it, it breaks you. We break it by our get way of life, the way of vanity, coveting, envy, jealousy, competition and strife with violence and wars, resentment of authority. I mean, that this just all sounds far too familiar. He says, our problems are spiritual in nature, and we've lost all sense of true values. We need desperately to change. You see, what's being advanced today takes us a step closer to what a time period in the past, Judges chapter 21, verse 25, where it says there that everybody was just doing what was right in their own eyes. Right? Take from the rich and give to the poor. Give money to those that want to work or those that don't want to work. Change all the economy. Everything is going to be sunshine and ponies. Right? It sounds great. Human beings are selfish. They want to get all of that. And Satan just broadcasts those destructive thoughts, and they just are so easily received by unsuspecting human beings. There is a lot of appeal to a hard worker that isn't earning enough money to pay for his family, that's looking at a really desperate situation. There's a lot of appeal for government handout and welfare. But all we have to do is look at history. How has that helped our nation, or how has it hurt our nation in times past? We have to understand these are character-destroying thoughts, and we have to stand up and fight them, and we do so from the pages of the Bible. You remember in the first segment, Gerald Fleury talked about the flood of Noah, right? And what's interesting, if you study prophecy, if you know the Olivet prophecy, Jesus Christ said, well, the days of Noah are going to be a wonderful or a very closely typed situation to what we're going through today. What we're going to live through in this last hour is going to be just like the days of Noah, where a warning message was going out. And as Gerald Fleury said, when the floodwaters came, it just caught everybody by surprise. It wasn't that they weren't warned. The problem was they refused to repent. They built a society that they thought what was impossible for God to affect. They thought they were above God. Jesus Christ said in Matthew 24, verses 37 through 39, he's talking about the days of Noah. He says, in the days that were before the flood, they were eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage. They were partying. They were going to the movies, right? Everything seemed fine. The whole world's falling apart around them. The last part of that passage says, they knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. The United States today is honoring the best movies. They've legalized marijuana in different parts across the country. We're fighting a war, but that doesn't really make any news anymore. This church is warning. And if you listen to the online appearance campaign, there is a call to action from God. He expects us to act on this warning, to change our lives. That's the beauty of working with God. He works with individuals. He protects and blesses individuals. He'll take care of our needs. The solutions are not there with man. You see, this isn't just an economic or political issue. It gets down to character. And of course, the lawless life without concern of penalty, that's just so appealing to mankind. It's been that way for 6,000 years, or nearly 6,000 years. It makes for very popular and convenient political rhetoric, right? Everybody can have this equality. We can all save the planet. You know, don't worry about how much it costs. We don't have to pay attention to that. So when you start to think about these socialist agendas, we have to remember where they originate from. It dates back past President Bush or President Johnson or President Roosevelt. It's far beyond Venezuela. We'll play a clip on the next program from Mrs. Thatcher. That is, she was putting up a defense before the House of Commons, because even here they were promoting socialist policies. And she said, well, you could just go across the channel and you can talk to thousands or millions. I'm adding words here, but you could talk to the Eastern Europeans and you can ask them how well they like socialism. You see, we have to get God's perspective if we want solutions. Mankind has to repent from selfishness and the get way of life. What we're seeing today in the Green New Deal is not a new movement, not at all. And as I said, we'll hopefully have another program coming up in a day or so, and we'll continue this thought. And in that program, too, I want to also discuss some of the problems they have with greenhouse emissions and their proposed solutions. But really, that's all we have time for today. I'm sorry that I over-prepared, but it gives me some material to come back to you with shortly. As I understand it, Steve and Fleury will be delivering the program tomorrow. So I really encourage you to listen to that. He's going to be giving us information about the online campaign, I'm sure, and what's going on in Jerusalem. That it's really just going to be a very exciting week for us as God's apostle continues to work all over the earth, and this work just continues to be dynamic in its expansion. So it's been really fantastic to be with you. I've enjoyed Ed Stone. I appreciate Bradley Smithies. He's been the producer here. Really, thank you for listening, and hopefully we'll be hearing from Mr. Stephen Fleury tomorrow.